Chase. Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. How's tonight? It's Dave Scatina on the board of this chilly morning.
Good.
He loves it, though. He likes the cold weather. Kind of a guy, you know. Is that true, David?
No, it's not true, Tom.
I didn't think maybe it was. Anyway, SP Futures up 7. NASDAQ Futures up 15, even though we sold off hard yesterday in the close. We were up all day yesterday, and then we basically puked out right on the close, and the NASDAQ was down pretty heavy. But the S&P's never quite made it to the negative, but they got to flat. Now we're up again this morning as we have Lou with us.
Yes, sir. How do you read me?
Might have to move a little bit. Have you been pardoned?
No. My offenses were not nearly significant enough to deserve the attention of the president.
How would you like to be, no matter what it was, being it for lunch, being it for pardon, being it for detention in high school, how would you like to be a part of that group?
I'm still a little bit stunned by the sort of the flourish with which this administration is ending, but I mean the guy is a chaos agent, and we've talked about that before, and you know we're back in chaos, man.
I especially like the part of the two representatives, because this is my wheelhouse. You know more about the other stuff than I do. The two representatives, the elected officials that were nailed for like insider trading,
yeah,
we're pardoning them.
Well, you know, it's at this stage, nothing surprises me. I mean, he vetoed the defense budget. I understand why. I get it. I think he rightly lambasted Congress over the COVID relief bill. So you know, he's one for three. Some of the parts he hasn't used the pardon power anywhere near as much as his predecessor or any of his predecessors, and so I'm you know I just sort of throw my hands up and say, okay, let's just watch this play out. I mean, as long as we're not going to have a coup attempt, I guess we're okay.
Well, I'm not an expert on this whole thing, obviously, but I do, you know, have a memory. I seem to recall when Obama was doing this. Now, you know, the Clinton thing with Mark Rich, of course, every right-winger says whatever Trump does is okay because Clinton pardoned Mark Rich. Well, you know what? I don't buy that. Two wrongs don't make a right. Never did. But I seem to recall that somewhere in some kind of news conference that somebody asked Obama or one of his senior people about the pardon. They actually have. There's a pretty serious process for going about doing that, being a commuted sentence or a pardon. And it has to do with, say a Blagojevich type of thing. I mean, nobody ever got 14 years for that because he never ended up getting a dime. You know, I mean, so there's a process to show that something was uniquely unfair in what happened to whatever it is to this person. Now, it isn't to say that these guys always follow it, but there is, don't people have to sort of apply for it? And isn't there, you know, a recommendation made by a group of people that's what they do? I mean, there is it isn't just Obama in his last week, even though he probably did more people. It isn't like the last week all he did was say everybody was sort of, he likes, it's a jail, let's throw him out. I mean, there seems to be somewhat of a difference.
No, this is not an ad hoc process. Now, the president's decision making may be ad hoc, but the process itself is fairly involved. So, these are things that have been in the works. I was aghast at what at Clinton's pardons at the very end. As far as I can tell, the people that Trump is pardoning, or the objectionable pardons that Trump is engaged in, there are only a few, but the objectionable ones at least don't seem to have benefited him directly, unlike Clinton with the donations to the Clinton Foundation and the other stuff that was apparently a quid pro quo. I don't see the quid pro quo here with Trump. Maybe I'm missing something.
Well, yeah, what's the connection between him and the healthcare guy that he claims? What's his name? The guy they claim has been the biggest thief ever and Medicaid stealing and Why let him out? I mean, what's the connection to him and Trump?
I don't know. I mean, I don't understand it. But I have worked just harking back here, and then I want to steer us to something a little more serious. I want to do something serious and something light today, and I wanted to start with the serious stuff. But I worked for general officers who had comparable kind of executive powers and functions, and one of them, I mean, these are guys, you know, 4-stars guys, and at least one of them reminded me a lot of the president because of the kind of capricious nature of his decision making. And I can tell you is, you know, guys get to that level and they're convinced that what got them to the level was their hunches and their insight in some cases. And so they get a hunch, or they get some kind of guess, or they get some kind of feeling, and you know, at that point, it's over. You're not going to convince them of anything. We had a case where I had a fairly serious misconduct case when I was a JAG, where we had prosecuted this thing, you know, exactly right. We pulled everything together. We had to immunize one of the participants for testimony, what's called testimonial immunity, so we could force the guy to testify. And this 4-star stepped into the middle of this thing and blew it all up. You know, we have a year's worth of work in investigating and preparing this case for trial, and it just disappeared at the stroke of a pen, and we never got anything from his staff or anybody associated with him as to why this happened, except one of his aides confidentially told me that it just rubbed him the wrong way, the way that the case looked, and he just didn't like the way it looked, and that was the end of it. And so I think you're seeing something like that with the president.
Well, one of the guys who writes into me, I've got a whole bunch, which is fine. I love it and learn from it. Give me some story, and I don't know what it was about, but, well, I don't know what the motivation was, but the upshot of it was that we have way more generals and, like, colonels than we had during World War II. And what do these guys do all day?
Well, that leads me nicely into my second point, or the serious point that I wanted to talk about and I wanted to raise with you. And I'd be interested in Dave's input on this as well at some point in the discussion. These guys, the bureaucratization of the American military, our tooth-to-tail ratio, has been slipping dramatically since you know, World War II. We are a much more bureaucratic kind of operation. And one of the things that happens with that is the diffusion of responsibility and the diffusion of accountability. And this all came back to me with the announcement that there was a widespread cheating scandal on a calculus exam at West Point in the finals of this semester. New York Times has reported it. I haven't seen anything other than the initial reports and maybe some confirmation from West Point officials. But I'm an Air Force Academy grad, and one of the things that graduates, at least of my age and the guys a little older, hold dear, is this idea of the honor code. The honor code at the service academies is a very serious thing. It is at a couple of other schools too, supposedly. I don't know how it's enforced in places like Virginia now, but there were some schools that had a very, very serious honor code, and these service academies have long prided themselves on the fact that integrity, you know, lying, cheating, stealing, or tolerating any of that conduct was grounds for expulsion. No questions, no rehabilitation, no mitigation. If you lied about something as simple as whether you slept on top of your bed covers at night rather than sleeping under your covers, which was a regulation for fourth classmen, for freshmen some seniors ready to graduate within week, you know, within weeks of graduation, falsified some statement to somebody, or you know, cribbed notes on some exam, and they were terminated.
Actually, the Irish Notre Dame used to have an honor code before
Notre
I got there.
Notre Dame, comparable to UVA, had a serious honor code. What's happening now? What's going to happen with most of these guys at West Point? And this started along. This started 40 years ago, almost 50 years ago now. With another West Point scandal, the electrical engineering exam, the JUICE exam at West Point in 1976, over 150 guys were tagged cheating on this exam back then, and they didn't throw all of them out at that point. Air Force then had another major cheating scandal about 7 years later in 1983, and I was working at the Secretary of the Air Force's office at that point and became aware that the fact that they were getting ready to throw out a number of cadets suddenly created a firestorm of political protest because, you know, these were the scions of, these were the sons and daughters that were affected by this, of, in some cases, influential people or friends of influential people. And those people picked up the phone and called their congressman or their senator, who then picked up the phone and called the Secretary of the Air Force. I was working at the Secretary of the Air Force's office at the time. There is now, most of these guys, I understand what's going to happen at West Point and what happens in most of the honor cases at Air Force and at Navy. They don't expel people for this anymore. They engage in a rehabilitation exercise. And this causes a lot of backlash within the graduate community, and it is generating the same kind of discussion you would see now. And so the question I put to you guys is this: how crucial is integrity in public service? How crucial is integrity, especially in the military, for your military officers, but just generally in public service? And what kind of an erosion have we seen over the last, you know, two generations in terms of integrity that we should demand from our
That we have this guest once in a while, like every weekend, Thursday, that used the term moral relativism. I think you accused Mr. Matt Weber of being one of those guys. Lou,
I don't think I accused him of it. I just said, you know, what he was giving us was at one point an example of it. But I don't think I ever accused Matty of being a moral relativist.
Yeah, he did, because he was, and he is, to a certain extent, but he's also getting a lot better as he ages. Just saying, you know.
Yeah, there's nothing like having children to have this kind of thing really hammered home to you. But I mean, what do you think? I look at, you know, I mean, the president's relationship with the truth on trivial stuff, or in some cases non-trivial stuff, but his relationship with the truth is pretty casual, you know, in a lot of things. His predecessor's relationship with the truth was pretty casual.
Yeah, yeah. Well, any politician appears somewhere, yeah. Somewhere, Lou, it, I don't know what happens to those people, but some of my right-wing, Southside people regarding Trump. And you know what? I'm trying to morph into this. I'm listening more than talking, although it's probably not all that obvious on the show, but, trying to anyway. And what I'm trying to figure out what people are really meaning when they talk, and I know my significant other is sort of like this. And I mean, in the sense that she has some right wing tendencies, and getting worse or better depending on how you look at it. And it's when people say, "Well, Trump lies all the time," and which I mean, it's hard to debate that, right? I mean, he. If the truth slapped him in the face, it'd be the first time.
Let me focus this a little bit, because in terms of one of the things that was impressed upon me as a young officer was that you're dealing with, especially in operations, you're dealing with things that kill people. You're dealing with decisions that kill people or are going to get people killed. And under those circumstances, the idea that you couldn't trust the word or the statement of the guy who was sending you out to get killed or sending other people out to get killed is anathema to any kind of effective unit operation or any kind of effective military discipline.
Lou, the entire society now, for whatever reason, and I'm not, go back to the nuns and your parents in those days who were, maybe they came out of the military tradition, who knows, but I mean, it certainly came out of that generation. This whole idea that, if you did something bad, it's okay because the neighbor kid did something worse. That didn't fly in our years. And now, if you ask anybody about, I asked three people yesterday that are on the show, by the way, regarding Trump's pardons. Every single one who was on the right said, well, what about Clinton? We're not talking about Clinton.
I didn't say that.
No, you didn't. I mean, you didn't, but I'm saying the other three people did. What about Clinton? He was just a bit. What has that got to do with anything?
So the question comes back then. Are we at the position now? And I mean, for you and me, Chief, the big swing, I think, in our view of our public servants and people in public service and integrity, the big swing in that perception started, I think, around the time of Vietnam.
Yes.
Where we started seeing more transparency in how decisions were being made and a lot more sort of revelatory kind of reporting about the mendacity, to quote that great line from A Streetcar Named Desire, I believe it is, the mendacity of our public officials on all kinds of things. But the big swing started then for me. Do we just assume that these people lie to us regularly? And should we accept that? Incompetence is bad enough, and God knows, the decisions that we require, that we are making now with the kind of integrated society we have, the decisions we have are making now are complex. It's difficult enough to sit down and try to work out a proper course of action. And if you want to see that play out, look at the COVID response. But should we accept a level of just outright lack of integrity that seems to permeate?
It seems like it, for lack of a better term, it seems to grow on itself, Lou. And I think part of it has to grow on itself is that, I don't know if it's, I'm not going to say the press, because it has to do with, if somebody were to say, and this is leadership, okay, and leaders, guess what? I have a feeling that I'm as good of an options trader for retail people that walks on this earth. I mean, that's my only real ego, that I can, if somebody has some risk stuff they need to do or whatever, that I can take what they say and put it into words as good as anybody. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm not going to make mistakes. Clearly is not. But I recognize that. But what we seem to lack is somebody, pick a name, Pritzker, Lori Lightfoot, Trump, anybody, any of the representative senators that are, I don't even know their names, they seem incapable of telling anybody, these are the five factors in this decision. This is what I've learned. This is what is influencing my decision. Here's my decision. If it's right, all these things happen. If it's wrong, all these things happen. And oh, by the way, we're going to monitor it weekly, daily. And if I'm wrong, we're going to switch and do this. And that just might happen.
I absolutely agree with you, and I think I've said it for the last four or five times I've been on the show. You see this played out as directly as anything in our public health policy on this COVID response.
Yeah.
And how, so the question is, why do we not demand accountability? Why is a figure like Rahm Emanuel, for example, to use an example, someone who is the mayor of Chicago, suppresses the execution video of Laquan McDonald being shot by that police officer 17 times with absolutely no provocation whatsoever. Emanuel's and his people suppress that video so that it doesn't come out before his election. And why was there no outcry over that?
Well, there was, but there's no There's no
accountability for him.
No, there's no way to
stayed in public life.
Yeah, there's no. Well, for God's sake, look at A-Rod. It comes down. I don't have the answer for it.
I can live with sports figures who turn out to have feet of clay when it comes to this kind of thing. The steroid abuse issues, the gambling issues, whatever. I can live with that and the lack of integrity there. What I have just an unbelievable amount of trouble accepting is the lack of integrity in our elected officials and the bureaucrats that service them and put their policies in action, or in some cases frustrate their policies.
One of my member who's an Orthodox Jewish group, and they're in tight with this group in Miami. And the mayor, who I don't know what he did down there, Lou, you know probably more than me, but I don't know if he misrepresented stats or whatever, but he came up with all the money to build the Marlins stadium.
Yes.
And of course, when everybody found out about how much he spent and what a disaster it was, the guy gets tossed out of office. Yet, according to my friends, if you want your number one guest in one of the skyboxes, and one of the number one movers and shakers in Miami is still this guy.
Sure.
I mean, I think to a certain extent, I hate those people, and I'm going to be one myself, that like blame society or blame something, but we never, I mean, what should be, you know, should we paddle them or waterboard them, of a mayor? But I think with these guys, they get so in love with their own decisions that they can't back down. I mean, look at Vietnam. I mean, instead of saying we were losing, they went into body counts. I mean, what did that have to do with anything? Lyndon Johnson, one of the most chilling tapes, our girl Kathy. Remember Kathy?
Yes.
And she, Kathy, what the hell was her last name?
Durbin.
Yeah, and got her blanking. She found a tape where Lyndon Johnson was talking to one of his good old boy, senators, and doing the draw thing, and the guy in the Lyndon's talking to the guy, and he goes, "Can't win this war. Can't win this war." And I guess that means can't win this war in his vernacular. And the guy goes, "Lyndon, nobody likes a loser. Nobody likes a loser. You never get reelected. Nobody likes a loser. You can't pull out." So the next day, he sent 50,000 more people there. What do you do to the guy? Should you and I, before we get, if we get escorted to heaven, do we ask for 2 days off and go down to hell and beat the crap out of the guy? I mean, what do we do?
Let's. What I found incredible when I was working on these cases and reviewing these cases at the Secretary of the Air Force's office, I was working as an intern, but I was an academy graduate, and the general counsel knew that, and she asked my opinion about dealing with these cadets who had cheated, and made me aware of the pressure that was being brought to bear on the president and at the time and the Secretary of Defense over this incident. And I said, the rules are the rules, and the rule I was subject to was that if I'd been found guilty of cheating on an exam, I was gone. And it didn't matter when it happened or whatever, I would have been gone. And she said, "Well, when these decisions start affecting people when these decisions start affecting the sons and daughters of your friends or your own children, all of a sudden, apparently, this perspective changes." And I said, "Yeah, but, that's why this was a cadet-run system, because the cadets running their own honor code were not susceptible to the kind of political pressure that the rest of the leadership was susceptible to."
Hey, I have a quick question when you start talking about the political pressure.
Let me just finish this thought. And you know what happened as a result of that honor scandal in 83? They took, the leadership took the Honor Code administration away from the cadet wing. They removed it from the cadets because, as somebody pointed out, you got a bunch of guys in college making decisions that are going to come back and reverberate for me as a, as a general, and I'm not going to allow that. There's too much. It's too dangerous for me personally. So we're going to remove that discretion from those cadets.
You can't let anything be apolitical, Lou. You know that. Hey, I was recruited a little bit to those places. And if I just said, okay, how do I get my, who gets to give my recommendations? Senator, representative, right? Did they find somebody for me, or would I have had to go on to Adlai Stevenson at the time or whatever?
I mean, I was a recruited football player at Air Force. And so the way that process worked was that I competed for a congressional nomination, and I won. I mean, I won the congressional nomination on my own. It was not the football people didn't get involved with it. But if I had not gotten the nomination on my own, there were nominations available from other congressmen or senators who did not fill their slots for nominees, or who turned the slots over to the Academy Registrar and said, I've got X number of people who are available. One of them is this kid, this football player. Get somebody who's qualified.
Well,
slots were available.
Does a senator get two people a year to every military college, or to two total, or what is it? I mean, they made it sound to me like if I forgot who the senator was at the time, if he was Philip, we'll get you some guy from like North Dakota that didn't use his spot. Is that what happens?
That's sort of what happens. Yeah, each senator gets one nominee, and you know, nominates as many alternates as they want, and the same with each representative.
Because I have a quick story. I mean, we only got a few seconds
here. There are also presidential nominations, and then there's a select number of slots for children of Medal of Honor winners and things like that.
Well, one of my best friends, Notre Dame grad, he spent his freshman year at where you were, Air Force Academy, and somewhere along the line, he said a couple of guys. These guys were far down the line. I don't know if you ever heard this story, but somehow or another, the guys were skiers, and you know, skis were always guaranteed, right? Allegedly. And somehow or another, the guy pulled the edge off his ski, just regular skiing, and the ski company basically told him to go pound sand, so, because the ski didn't break or something along those lines. So these guys put it basically in the stairwell and jumped on it and broke it. And they were witnessed by two or three other guys.
That would get you expelled.
And it got down where all five guys or four guys all got expelled.
Oh, yeah. Well, and not only would they get expelled, but the guys who watched it and who understood, understood what was happening.
Well, that's what happened.
They would be expelled.
That's what happened. And like one of the guys watching it was like a senior straight in. And it caused a little bit of a reverberation. And I'm sure something like that happened. You know, one of the guys up top is like, is that really what we want to do? But yeah, I think the answer is yes.
Well, and that's that's the question. I mean, for every officer that I served under who was, you know, smart and good and thoughtful, every one of them at some point made it very clear to their staffs that integrity was pass fail.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah.
If you lie to me, if I can't trust you, you're gone.
Well, let's continue to stay for the break. Low SP futures up 6, NASDAQ futures up 11. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. We have Mr. Lou Michaels with us, as we do every Thursday. S&P futures up 475. Now we're still up, but we're less up than we were a while ago. NASDAQ futures up 9. Dow futures up 54. That's 54. In the Dow, we got Boeing up 121. We've got Microsoft up 59 cents, but nothing really. Johnson & Johnson up a buck and a half. Nothing really going crazy one way or the other here. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 169. It's 1.2%. They've been up and down pretty much all week, but they had that huge down day the other day, so they're still kind of making back that. We've got the FTSE up 8, only 1%, kick around down 1, call that flat. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 143.5%. Shanghai, which has really been up and down this week, down 19, that's 0.6%. Hang Seng, pretty quiet, up 43, that's 0.1%. This is a way of review. Yesterday, Dow was up 114, day before was down more than that. S&P up 2, and the NASDAQ was down 36. All this happened pretty much in the last 15 minutes, and NASDAQ was up all day. Bonds, 0.94, right where they've been. Still trying to make a run at 1%, but not there yet. Bund, minus 0.54. Japan, positive 0.01, so they're actually up a little bit. They were almost dead flat yesterday. Oil, down 50 cents, 47.62. Seems to be very quiet in this 47 to 48 range now, at least for the last 7 or 8 days. Brent down 50 cents, 50.68. Natural gas down 5 cents. 255, but even though it's chilly this morning, the forecast must be for continued mild weather because that's not very high for natural gas. RBOB down a penny at 136. Last but not least, we got gold down 50 cents, 1877. Silver down 8 cents, 2584. Copper unchanged at 354. So, David, other than the fact that it was cold for you this morning, what's the traffic weather sports?
Good morning. It's 638 in Chicago. Traffic this morning on Christmas Eve, very light. I would imagine it would stay that way most of this morning. We shall see as the day goes on. Weather in Chicago, very cold this morning, 15 degrees with flurries. The current wind chill is minus 2. The high today is going to be partly cloudy and 21. To our Phoenix listeners, 47 degrees and cloudy with a balmy 63 and mostly cloudy. In sports, the NBA opener, the Bulls lose to the Hawks, 124-104. The Phoenix Sun beats Dallas, 106-102. College basketball, number 16 Illinois tops Penn State, 98-81. Northwestern beats Indiana, 74-67. The NFL this weekend on Saturday, Arizona takes on the 49ers, and Sunday the Bears take on the Jaguars. Back to you, Chief.
So the Christmas of 83, Lou, I don't know if you recall, it was 25 below zero. So today is balmy compared. Well, it depends on which way you look, David.
Right. Absolutely.
I just have a recollection of walking in to the Stocks and Jocks World Headquarters Breakfast Buffet probably around the 2012-2014 time frame in 16 below zero weather.
Yeah, it was bad. We had a few bad days.
Walking to the actually right out where I'm at right now. It's I think it's just about, I think we're slightly above zero. I think the wind chill is you know, like you guys, maybe five below. I'll see the sun today for most of the day. That's the big difference.
Well, 25 below at the before you had fuel injection in cars was always an adventure.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, I mean, I think I told you I grew up in Winnipeg. I spent my early childhood in Winnipeg for 8 years. And in Manitoba in the 1960s, you know, if you parked your car outside, you parked it by an electrical outlet. There were electrical outlets with cords on them that you could plug your car into if you left it outside for any length of time. That, so there was an electric heater in the radiator to make sure that your radiator didn't freeze. And I think the coldest I've ever personally experienced was somewhere around 45 below zero, and that was in Fairbanks when I was flying for the Air Force.
We stayed skiing a couple nights up in Grand Targhee, which is basically in the Tetons. And one morning we got out, and somehow or another, I mean, I was pretty good at the setting the choke and all that stuff. People don't know what a choke is anymore, other than a choke hold. And I got my old Jeep started, but boy, it was 10 minutes before we could move anywhere.
I don't want to get into old timer swapping weather stories, but it's hard to tell people now what cars and tires used to be like. So, for example, again in the '60s, where you had a high nylon content in the tires, the tires at 40 below zero or 35 below zero, and we saw 30 below zero temperatures in Winnipeg fairly regularly. Your tires would actually flatten out on one side where they were in contact with the ground because of the temperature. And you'd be driving along, and until they warmed up, you'd have a thump, 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 thump as your tires were, you know, that square side or that flattened side was hitting the pavement. So I told you that I wanted to go, you know, one serious con.
Okay, wait, one second. Before you do that, I got a couple more questions on what we just talked about. So
the question I left it was on was why do we forfeit this accountability or mitigate accountability for people, and we're willing to accept it for our friends, and even though we understand when we're willing to accept it for our friends or friends of friends, we set the standard for everybody else. Why does that happen?
I don't know where we've gotten this routine, Lou, where we talk about, well, I mean, whether it was Trump or whether it was. Like what I started to say earlier is that some of my people from the South Side, for sure, even though, you know, Trump lies about everything, their view is every politician they've ever experienced does nothing but lie about everything. There's not going to be taxes, and then there are. I mean, anything. I mean, Trump's the first guy that will lie to you whether or not he went to the bathroom in the morning, just to lie. But other people, and anything important, they always lie to you. You know, so I mean, and their idea is it really doesn't matter.
I mean. You know, look back at Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Joe Biden in his campaigns for president, lying about his class status, lying about whether he got a scholarship, lying about, you know, what a high IQ he had. I mean, just why are you lying about that stuff? I mean, first of all, we can check it, but second of all, it doesn't make any difference. It's this casual relationship to the truth that we seem to.
Well, plus, what if you did have in some tests
or accept.
Some test 60 years ago, if you had a high IQ, what difference does it make, Will? I mean,
I don't know, but it was a, but I mean, I'm of the opinion that the character of the individual who's just been elected is really not that much different from the character of the individual that
I don't think that it's the character of the last 10. I mean,
yeah.
It's to me they all seem, but we're at a place where if you don't tell people what they want to hear, you don't have a chance of being elected. I mean, Bill Clinton was the first person to actually do it. I mean, did you ever go to one of those focus group things, Lou, to make a few bucks?
Yes. Well, more importantly, I've run focus groups as a trial attorney, so yeah.
Well, Dr. J and I, we lived out south back in 80, we were just starting to trade, didn't want to say a whole lot of dough. And so we'd go to these focus groups, and we'd make $75. We couldn't wait to get out of there. We'd go have a nice dinner and split up the rest.
Yeah.
But some of them were wild. People want to know what your impressions and stuff are. But I mean, somewhere there's a fine line here, and I don't know what it is. I've never been a politician. I will tell you this: when I do the show, and I've been doing this for a long time. If you don't want to worry about what you said, you absolutely cannot lie. I don't lie anyway, because I mean it's just the way I was brought up. But you have to have the confidence that if somebody asks you a question at 3 p.m, you're going to answer it the same way you did in the morning.
Well, and in fact, that's when you're dealing with this was one of the really difficult things that you try to get across to your clients as a trial attorney. When you're trying cases, you sit down with your people and you say, "Look, I need the truth. We need the truth. It doesn't matter, you know, whether the truth is awful or whether it's wonderful or whether it's just benign. We need the truth because the truth is what you're going to remember when you're up on the witness stand. If you lie to me, if you lie to other people, the story changes. And when the story changes, even a little bit, your credibility in that setting goes out the window. So yeah, if you want to avoid problems, tell the truth and tell the truth now so that we can deal with the truth. But if you lie to us, and I guarantee you, it's going to come out. It's going to come out in terms of inconsistency because only really, really, really devious people can and smart people can keep a lie straight from the truth over and over again as they retell things.
I have one quick question, and we'll go on to your next topic. When you talked about repercussions, right now, and there aren't any. I mean, right now, to me, everything I've ever learned, again, it could be, quote, different this time. But, boy, every time I hear that, I just hear wants to stand up on the back of my neck. But it could be different this time. But it's somewhat obvious to me, Lou, and again, hopefully I'm wrong, that the Fed is doing some stuff now to pump asset prices up that is benefiting a certain group of people as opposed to other people. You know, they're obviously playing monetary favorites. And when you look at what they do to the banks and what they do to the asset holders versus people that aren't asset holders, I mean, those kinds of things. But if it all blows up, I mean, anything that will tell you, we're going to end the year this year at over 25% increase in money supply. In the late 60s, early 70s, when they started the inflation fiasco, the number was 12.5%. It was half of what it is now.
Yeah.
Now, these guys have doubled that. Now, if it turns out that we get a blow in the inflation or people start looking at inflation that I see that for some reason doesn't make it into the news, all of a sudden this pops out and we get some kind of a market crash, especially in some of these new stocks that came out that are all 10, 11 times revenue now, but they're being chased by money. Okay, they've been just like in 2000, just like in 68, yeah. They're being chased. Now, what if this does collapse and all of a sudden there's even more and more hardship where somebody's first trade was, you know, 20 grand in some stock that somebody talked them into buying, and now it's worth 1 grand, you know, or something. And now it takes them 6 or 7 years even to take that money off, you know, their taxes. There's not going to be any repercussions for these people. No, none whatsoever. And yet, they're so far out on a limb, theory-wise, that they should be talking to people saying, this is why we're doing it. By the way, we know it's a risk, but, Lou, they're making it sound like it's not even... This is regular Main Street. It's not. This is. I mean, we've got the Democrats now. They were the largest number. Trump and the Democrats. We're talking about the difference between $600 and $2,000. Right now, if we're going to go out and borrow that money from people that are whatever, they're wealthy, not wealthy. If let's put it this way, if the wealth is available, and we borrow that money and we turn around and give it to people who are in the lower end that are being affected by this more than others. That's, quote, a policy decision on one level. I mean, maybe a couple of levels. But just turning on the printing press and sending the money out there is a policy decision on, like, 3 or 4 levels that they're not even talking about to people. I mean,
no.
I mean, there's a whole different... If you just did step one, I mean, that's the difference between... They probably did a little bit of it. But in World War II, the government was in hack money-wise, but they were in hack to their citizenry. They had gone out and sold $50 bonds to regular people, right? And so one side of the balance sheet, the government was essentially broke, although, you know, the taxes were going up because people came back and all kinds of innovation and stuff. But on the other side were the people who lived there. So it was like you owning your wife to a certain extent. But that's not what we're talking about now. Now we're talking about printing the money, sending out the degrading the currency, People who get that can be in assets that run up faster than the currency's going down. Other people can't. I mean, we're causing all kinds of stuff here that they happen to whole different groups of people. And I don't think, A, we're not explaining it. B, people have never taken an economics class, don't understand what's going on. And C, they're just blown right by the risks. And if something bad happens, what? Paul goes back to be some mealy-mouthed professor somewhere or what? I mean, what is the motivation? What's going on?
So here is the lead-in now to my lighter topic. And I'm going to harken back. I assume you've seen this movie. What I want to talk about is Christmas movies, and favorite Christmas movies, and memorable and lesson-teaching Christmas movies.
Hey,
And that your lead-in is Potter Savings and Loan.
Hey, Lou, could we shelve this for 5 minutes? Because your girlfriend, AV, has called in, and you guys wanted to talk a little bit about this
Navalny thing.
Yeah, would you guys want to do that? Because I think that's fascinating.
If she's on the line and we can plug her in, sure.
Sure, we have AV, you with us?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, you sound good. Coming in loud and clear. We have your older boyfriend, Lou, on the other line, and he wants to talk about this with you. Lou, you want to set the...
Hi, Lou.
Доброе утро. Как вы поживаете?
Oh, God.
Хорошо. Как у вас дела?
Это холодно. Где я здесь? So, anyway.
See what you started,
Russian,
David?
It's too early out here for me to be talking Russian to engage that part of my brain.
All right, which one of you wants to set this up? Lou, why don't you talk about it real quick, because... and then AV can pile in. But this is the guy who ran against Putin. Just set the story up real quick.
So it's Alexander Navalny, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's the
Alexei.
Okay, Alexei Navalny. He is the major dissident within the Russian Federation. He is a challenge to Putin. He runs his own publication Putin has been nibbling away at cutting back his ability to raise hell and criticize Putin and the oligarchs. And Navalny was this summer, back in August, allegedly poisoned by a Russian nerve agent, Novichok, I believe it's called. That is a sort of a classic assassination weapon used by the FSB, the Russian state security operation, and supposedly he recovered. He was treated first in Omsk, I believe, then flown to Berlin, where he was treated. The Germans say, "Yeah, this nerve agent was found in his system," and he recently surfaced with a tape, a video containing the audio tape of a phone call that he supposedly made to one of these Russian agents who had been identified as being involved in the plot to poison him. He set it up in a way that it sounded like and looked like to the guy who was to whom he was calling. It looked like the call was actually coming from a senior Russian administration official. And Navalny got on the phone and said, "You know, I demand explanations. What was going on here?" And so the FSB agent talked to Navalny and told him, "This is how we poisoned Navalny, and we can smear this stuff." one of the issues with the delivery of this nerve agent is how you do it. You don't spray it. They don't spray it out in a gaseous form. They typically smear it in some kind of gel or something like that, either on doorknobs or it could have been slipped into a drink. But what this guy said was that the easiest way to get somebody is to put this stuff in his clothing. And specifically, you put it in clothing where he's likely to sweat. So where are you most likely to sweat if you're a guy? Well, it's down between your legs. So they smeared it on his underwear, and that's how he was poisoned.
Now, so you invade
this. Having watched this video, I immediately ran and checked all my underwear, and it seemed to be okay.
So if I wanted to knock you off, I'd have to be hanging around in your underwear drawer?
How they got to his underwear, I have no idea. I don't know if that was... I don't think that was explained in the call, if I recall correctly. Is that right, AV?
Yeah, so because he was doing his investigation all this time since August, and he already had all the names, the guys who were involved in this assassination.
Right, they've been identified publicly.
Yeah, like, they don't know all the details, of course, but one of the, like, strongest reasons why they couldn't, like, prove, they didn't have proof of the, like, what item was actually poisoned. And it's,
right.
As I understood, it's a big win for them in the investigation after this call, because finally they know how exactly he was poisoned, because this is, military poison that's only available for higher structures in the government. It only could be released by, you know, like the highest authorities of FSB or other boards, Putin, but obviously.
So if you are a fan of Russian history, you are a fan of conspiracy. So you have to think about the conspiracy, the system that had to be put in place for Navalny, first of all, to use some kind of electronic means to mimic the phone call from this senior Russian administration official. So he had to have a phone system or some kind of electronic device that showed on the other end when he called this, this FSB agent, when he called him, it showed on this guy's phone that he was actually getting a call from the senior Russian official or somebody in the Putin administration at a very high level. So, who did that? How did he do it? It's probably unlikely that Navalny himself had the ability to do that. Somebody helped him. Of course, the Russian government says, well, it was the CIA.
Of course.
Yes.
So that's number one. Number two, again, the question is, how did they get to his underwear? I mean, that really is, that ought to put, you know, the fear of something into every guy that I know. That somebody could be monkeying with your underwear without you knowing about it.
Well, then this NCIS episode where they had the old Russian guy, they got bumped off. They used the old umbrella with the needle in the end. They put the little ricin piece
that
in you.
That is so, you know, 1980s.
Still works.
They don't need to do that anymore. They can take this gel, this nerve agent, that gel, smear it on a door handle, which is how they got that guy in England. And his daughter, they poisoned both of them. Although he didn't die, but you know, you have the ability to put this stuff almost anywhere. You can drop it into a liquid. You can smear it on something. You can apparently sprinkle crystals of it in your underwear. And I'll tell you right now, I'm looking very suspiciously at this talcum powder, that I have.
Are you guys, both of you? I mean, AV, please open out. The guy survived. Does everybody believe they attempted to bump him off, and has it made any difference to Putin or anybody, or did they just keep wandering on?
From Putin's perspective, I thought the best argument that Putin had was, look, if we wanted to kill him, we would have killed him.
That's wild. So yeah. He's saying if we really wanted to kill him, he wouldn't be here, so it must have been some amateur.
Well, I mean that's the that's, I think, the best argument for the fact that it wasn't Putin. I mean, why would they do it that way? Especially since, you know, it happened to him in Russian territory. Why not just shoot him out on a street corner some night? I mean, there are all kinds of ways of getting to people, and this seems to me to be a low end way to get to somebody. On the other hand, I had a client who was on the periphery of an assassination attempt of a predecessor at a bank, and they found out that the guy had died of lung cancer. And when they got into his office, they found that somebody had put a capsule of spent plutonium from a nuclear fuel rod. Somebody had inserted a capsule of that into the back of his desk chair. So as he sat in his desk over the course of, 3 months, he was gradually getting enough radiation to kill him.
That's swell.
Yeah. So, you know, there are subtle ways of doing it. But
so anyway, hey, it is Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas to both of you. AV, good to hear your voice. We've missed you. And hopefully we'll see you soon. Lou, I'd love to see you one of these days in the flesh. Do you ever come to Chicago? Or you mean, let's put it this way. When this all ends, do you have a reason to come to Chicago?
I would love. I'm going to be in Chicago as soon as this all ends because I need to come back and get some decent Italian beef and a decent pizza. So again, favorite Christmas movie, real quick.
I always liked It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life is pretty good. I think I go with Miracle on 34th Street. Dave, do you have a favorite Christmas movie?
It's a Wonderful Life. I watched it last night.
Yeah, that's a fantastic one. I'll throw out another one that I really enjoy, although it's pretty sappy, and it's called The Family Stone. And maybe we'll get some of the listeners come in on Twitter, but I would say Miracle on 34th Street or The Family Stone. My favorite all time live theater performance of anything Christmassy is Christmas Carol.
I'm going to say that the favorite Christmas scene, mainly because it was at the old LaSalle Street Station, you know, my hang up with trains, where the CBOE now is, by the way, was the scene in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, that's a great movie, too.
By the way, that scene was filmed on a Saturday when it was 97 degrees, even though, and they kept shoving crushed ice up there to make it look like snow, and it was sunny day, and even though they made it look like it was cloudy, it took all day to film that scene.
Well, and then I'll leave you with this, and this is the eternal question that surfaces on Twitter. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? It's a marvelously entertaining movie. I don't know. And then, of course, for TV shows, my all-time favorite viewing experience probably is the Charlie Brown Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Well, will you take care of yourself? Merry Christmas.
In there.
AV,
yep,
Merry Christmas.
And all the listeners.
All right, AV. I'll probably text you later and say Merry Christmas, and hopefully things are going well with you. We're heading off to break. Yeah. SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures up 10. We'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that...
So, David, you can understand why people
zero.
Like AV's voice more than yours.
Fed is trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware
hey,
of
hey,
that
tell
some
Dan that I,
risk, such as longer
he needs
term
to send that stuff
security.
He was supposed to send.
Now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not.
Now make
Everyone,
sure you tell them we need a...
need to share ideas
these
and
guys
think out
want to talk to a
now
client
now.
Like
That's
next
what
week,
I like
so they
about
need,
PTI Pro
they
Direct.
Need the stuff from
Their
them.
Staff of former option
They'll
floor
know
traders
what you're
really
about.
Helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every
I did
day.
Not get
we
it.
Love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great
they want to make
from
a presentation to this guy like real soon.
It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm sorry. Dave Scatina on the board. SP Futures up 550. NASDAQ exactly Futures up 1275. Fear. We should have Mr. Dan Janitas. Dial tone. I'm guessing we don't quite have him, but Dave will get him back. So we have the news this morning is maybe we have we might actually have a Brexit deal. How many times have we almost had one of those? It's almost like the COVID deal with Congress. But that's the news this morning. Probably the little pull on the market to the upside. At least that's helping. Do we have Dan yet, David?
Not yet. Hold on one right. second.
We'll get him in a sec. Again, we've got interesting movements in the stock this morning aren't very many. We've got Nike up 78 cents. Nike's doing pretty well selling this whole, this whole stuff where people are dying to buy all this stuff from China. I don't quite get. Talk about being moral relativists. We sure as hell are. But we can't wait to tear down a bunch of statues of people. Yeah, we're fine buying Chinese goods. I don't, good, because I was going into, Dan, you saved me, because I was about ready to, wander off into, we're disliking people who lived 500 years ago, but we're okay with buying Nike shoes from China, but I won't go there. I won't go there today. It's Christmas Eve. I'll leave that for another day. You
know? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, buddy. Now we got a hint of allegedly a Brexit deal today of some kind. So we've had, how many of those we've had, in the last 3 years, for God's sake?
Yeah, exactly.
What do you make of, the COVID deal as it is going to affect, it's going to affect, cash flow. It's going to affect money supply. It's going to affect interest rates. It's going to affect, unfortunately, what you and I do. I mean, does it matter whether it's 600 or they go back to the drawing board and throw 2,000 in there and, throw another couple hundred billion on top of it? I mean, I think it's starting to matter, but I don't know. Is it really?
The thing is, it's both of these are old stories. You know, we talk about Brexit, we're talking about the stimulus package, the COVID relief package, and these, this has been dragging on. And what's interesting is trying to watch the market's response to the news that comes out each day. And at this point, it's clearly that something is built in, but I think the market has sort of lost hope, if you will. And so there's, what I think is going to happen is we're going to see kind of a shift from this sort of asset, I don't want to call it asset inflation, but stocks, bonds, real estate, having benefited from the Fed's decision and having a very supportive Fed. I think what will happen in the new year is that we're likely to see more support on the relief side, whether it be, through additional unemployment or payments that are going to come to individuals. And I think when individuals start spending more, I know consumer spending has been down, that'll help drive the, what we've been talking about, the inflation picture, but I don't think it's going to happen in 2021. I think it's, we're going to see a shift from, if you want to call it asset inflation to, consumer inflation, but I think that's going to happen over time. So the relief will be very minimal. We've talked about some opportunities on the fixed income side right now. I'm looking at my Kratos high income portfolio, and a lot of the ETFs we own are trading at all, year to date highs, especially the short term corporate and short term high yield, which have done very well for us this year. The area that's been left behind a little bit is the municipal area. So when you ask the question about how is it going to benefit, I think this first package, this first bill will do a little bit. I think what's going to happen, what the market is anticipating and what I'm anticipating is going to happen more in 2021 is we're going to see more payments and more relief for the individual, for the consumer, if you will, going forward. There'll be a shift, a paradigm shift, if you will, from watching a 2020, which has been a year of asset inflation, to a year of consumer and consumer product inflation, starting at least in 2021, but not really being an issue that will impact us from an economic point of view until maybe 2022.
I do see
a little more value if we're looking on the bond side. I see more value in municipals. And there's a point where the crossover trade makes sense even for an IRA account, just because they've lagged, and because the relief that we're going to see is also, going into 2021, anything additional relief from the new administration is going to help, local municipalities, which I think in turn will help the credits for a lot of municipal bonds that we purchase.
I got from your lips to God's ear. I've help me with this one. My thoughts right now regarding essentially you said it much more eloquently, but if you were one of the stooges on TV, which you're not, you would say we're going to go from more of a monetary stimulus to a fiscal stimulus. Yet I question right now, I don't think there can be any fiscal stimulus, Dan, because they're not going to borrow a dime. The dime is going to come from the Fed. It's just going to be the two-step that it almost doesn't matter. Whenever the Fed pours money in the top, even though you might want to send checks to people, and you do to a certain extent, the money still pours in the same spigot through the banks, through the top, through the trickle-down stuff, and it ends up in the asset inflation kind of no matter what. I wish there was a way around it. I mean, I guess maybe sending out checks, but the municipal stuff, I mean, again, beat me up here, please, because I know that my thought process is amazingly jaundiced by being in Illinois. I mean, I get that.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But I just wonder, at the end of the day, I mean, even in Florida or places where, Texas, which has added, 4 million people in the last 10 years or whatever, even those people, I don't think anybody has, let's put it this way, the last chapter has not been written in regards to how bad the state coffers are going to be regarding bankruptcies and so forth of the COVID. I mean, I was at a long conversation the other night with Dan, it's getting to the point now where I'm a thirst for knowledge from everybody, and this guy he works for a place down in the South Loop, and I won't go into any names, but they own a bunch of buildings, and they've been around forever, and blah, blah, blah. And I was asking him, I said, what is the status of these places? And he goes, well, most of the people aren't paying. And you're doing your best to cut your rent down to nothing if you can, just to keep them there, because you've been in a relationship with people for 20 years, and you don't think it's going to last that much longer. I mean, at least you hope not. We're not getting any help from the county or the state in terms of them cutting back on some taxes. I mean, there's going to be people that just don't pay, probably. He said, but if you have the wherewithal, but the idea is that this is all going to be, I mean, one of these days, they're going to just get the big slap upside the head and say, we can't pay. What part of it don't you get? I don't know how that's all going to play out. I don't know how big it is. To the point where, municipals sound like they would be the place. Yet I have no idea. Is Cook County going to lose 25% of their tax? I have no idea.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that. I mean, I think sort of the worst of the worst news is out right now for the municipalities. But I guess what I'm saying going forward in terms of from an investment point of view, if you're looking for a place to put money, corporate bonds have really, the spreads have tightened. There's not as much value there. We have negative real rates, so we're not seeing a whole lot of yield. It's in a search for yield, it's really difficult to see a lot of upside. Any further spread tightening coming in the near future. So the spread tightening has happened in corporates. In municipals, I think because of the financial situation, especially with some of what I refer to as the high yield municipals, we again still look for short term. But I'm saying going forward with the new administration, I think there's going to be more funding for states, federal funding that's going to go to states that we haven't seen or that we've seen taken away. So that could and probably will benefit. I think there'll be additional benefits to the municipal market. Whether they have to struggle and for how many years, I think, is another story. But I think we're going to go from sort of this worst-case scenario that we're in right now to probably an area that has more chance for improvement over the next few years with the new administration, more money being given to local and state government, and that in turn will help municipals. The other area that you mentioned, real estate, we've already seen this really crazy run in real estate as well, and we have mentioned the self-storage, which actually sold off a little recently, but SELF, I think, still has some upside. But there's still some areas that are sort of down. If you look at it, like VNQ, which is the Vanguard's real estate and REIT index, which is kind of the standard index for real estate. That whole industrial sector, I mean, there's certain segments of the real estate market, commercial real estate market, that are going to take a lot longer to come back and may not have that additional support going forward. So, you know, again, from a bondholder's point of view, looking for a place to find yield, you know, I would turn more to, you know, we had talked before about the preferreds. I think they have more opportunity. The, you know, the Blue Knight was up 10% last week because they sold a division. They had some good news. But the fact that the preferred was up that much is very unusual, and I think the main reason for that is people seeking yield. So there's a situation where the underlying story is one of growth. Infrastructure build-out is going to help that company. And people are looking for yield. So you want to be looking in a place where you can get some yield, but you also want to see an environment going forward that's going to be positive for the underlying issuer, whether it be a municipality or a corporation. So the funding right now has been extremely tight, and I think in the near term there's going to be additional bleeding, especially in places that have already been under pressure. But I think there's going to be I don't want to call it a bailout, but I think there's going to be federal assistance going forward with the new administration that's going to at least shine a slightly more positive light on the municipal market.
I think you're absolutely right, Dan, and it wouldn't surprise me. I was going to ask you, let's say Illinois needs a bailout. Well, they're going to get a bailout a lot quicker under Biden than they would under Trump, because Trump hated the place.
Exactly.
but it's going to come in terms of what? Is it going to be a loan or a grant? Here's my concern. I agree that, with absolutely everything you say, which is, by the way, bad radios. But my concern, I mean, in the last 2 days, we've got a $900 billion COVID bill. And by the way, we popped another $1.4 trillion into the to get the government to go till next year. All right, so that's $2.3 trillion in excess for the next, let's say, fiscal year, which is probably not even that. It's more like 10 months. I mean, at some point, I mean, I know you know this, but it's hard to keep track of it all the time. We're talking about a place that has 1.7. If you get rid of the payroll taxes, which go right out the other pocket, we just blew away another year and a half worth of tax receipts. I mean, it's been at some point here, the idea that every state's going to be bailed out by the government, every city's going to be, I mean, they're not that big. I mean, it's not like their revenue's $30 trillion a year where they can lob trillions out there like if they're, you know, like their quarters. I mean, are we really talking about a $30 or $40 trillion deficit? I mean, and then all of a sudden, if the interest rates go to even 2%, the entire population can't even pay the interest then? I mean, where are we going with this? I mean, it's a point now where I don't even know where the return number is. It's like the avalanche is starting on its way down. I don't know how you stop it.
No, I totally agree with you on that. Historically, the government has been kind to municipalities that have been in trouble, and then the workout process for a municipal bond in a municipality that's had issues is generally more favorable than it is for a corporation that's been in trouble. So a number of the industries that have had trouble, whether they be airlines, anything related to travel, some of the energy companies that have, you know, that have gone into Chapter 11, less likely that the new administration is going to support that, more likely that they're going to support some assistance in some format to the states and the local municipalities. So that's, I think from the point of view of, like, looking at it from an investment point of view, I think there's more opportunity, but I agree with you. It's a major issue, just as it's a major issue with a large part of the population, maybe the lower income part of the population, but there's still a large part of the population that's being impacted by this. And, you know, will $600 be enough or $2,000 be enough? I don't know. I don't think so. So I think you're right. Those problems carry into the new year. The deficit continues to grow. Those are not positives, certainly. And in the meantime, the equity market seems to be going on in its own direction, but a lot of us, including people who are traditionally bond managers, are being forced to move into the equity area for upside. You know, that's a little more easy to see. You know, the companies have had a little more momentum, you know, more positive news coming out. a little more control over their own destiny, if you will, in terms of how they manage their balance sheet and how they manage their growth. So there has been this shift towards the balance manager, you know, keeping maybe a little more on the equity side right now, and looking for those areas that have opportunity next year, or staying short, definitely staying short, staying on the sidelines if you have to.
Well, the what does it say to you? And I have visions of 2000 in my brain. And what does it say to you that the stocks that are the hottest now aren't even in the indexes? I mean, it was kind of like that in 2000. But, you know, I don't know. What do they say on NCIS? There's no such thing as a coincidence. Or I don't believe in coincidences or something like that. When the government under Clinton's, well, Clinton would happen to be in the Oval Office, whether he had anything to do with it or not, I don't know. The idea that we went with this positive, we had a surplus, right? Or for, I mean, Carl will say that if you counted everything, we really never really did have a surplus, but let's say we were close enough that we were retiring bonds. I think, and if you, I don't know if you agree, or that somehow or another, the federal government did exceptionally well, as did the government of California, due to essentially the uneven tax treatment of your citizenry. So if you've got Dan Janita's dot bomb company that went from zero to 200, and somebody sold it at 200, he owed all those taxes, and the guy that bought it at 200 and went back down to zero didn't get any kind of a credit, of any kind of real credit. I think the government basically screwed the population, and that's how they got their surplus. And I think they're trying to do it again. Because the guys that owns, was it Snowflake or Snow something something?
Right, yes, exactly.
I mean, somewhere, you know, again, I'm not making investment, I'm not saying short or anything like that, but some percentage of those kinds of stocks now that are all, you know, 11 times revenue, I'm going to say that one or two of them become the next Microsoft, and the rest of them end up, what are these things ever priced there for in the first place? And the person who makes out like a bandit when they collapse, because they get paid taxes on one side and don't have to give the money back on the other, is the government. And are they doing this on purpose again? I mean, are they that sinister, or they don't even know what I'm talking about?
I don't think they know what you're talking about. That's the way that I know what you're talking about, but I'm not sure that that they're that focused on. And, you know, I don't know how much of an intention there is. I think there is some intention, actually. But you're right. If these companies, how much support is there going to be for these companies that that could be struggling over the next year? Because you're right, they're not all going to make it, especially if you look at the technology space, you know, as we have been. You really have to do your homework to pick the winners and to pick, really not just the winners, the survivors, the ones that are going to survive the competitive environment, the fiscal environment, you know, higher rates. And so are we going to get the support from the government? I agree with you. Less likely with the new administration to see that. How much of it's intentional? I think there's probably a certain piece that's intentional, but I think a lot more of it is not really totally understanding the market and how the support of, you know, failing companies or companies that are becoming distressed could be turned around. You know, it could really be huge benefit to the economy if there was more support in that area.
Dan, when you look at
that is a question. I think that's a very good question for what's coming up in the next administration, with the new administration.
Dan, when you look at the municipal stuff, and in general, I would agree with you that somewhere along the line that's going to be a good investment. But that's, I mean, there's a reason why I say this. Long story short, I mean, I always tell people where I get my thought processes. I was driving back from Rhode Island, whatever, bought an old truck. And I stopped at this place in Clarion, Pennsylvania. Dan, you'd have loved it. The bar was like the bar in Key Largo with Bogart. Like, everybody's driving back and forth. It's like the exact midpoint. So everybody there is either from New Jersey or New York or from Chicago. So, listen, one of the guys I was talking to, and I was fascinated, he was a city manager, evidently in Pennsylvania. I did not know this at all, and maybe you do. There's a lot of city manager-type governments and not mayors. You know, in Illinois, everything's a mayor pretty much, but,
right.
And he was saying that you have, and he was a city manager for two places, and his firm did consulting work for like five other cities. And he goes, you have no idea how uneven they are. They're all, you know, little coal towns, steel towns with, you know, 40,000 people, and a couple of them have, they've always paid the pensions just like they're supposed to. They've always, they've kept the number where it should be. They've all paid in. They don't owe anybody a dime. In a place right next door, you just drive by as the next exit, they gave people numbers because they were their friends. They could never afford it. They're in a hack like there's no tomorrow. Because the uneven, but when you talk about the municipalities, I mean, I honestly look at a Chicago and I wonder, I would love the debt after the bankruptcy. I mean,
that's exactly when you want to invest, is after that happens. Yeah, I know Puerto Rico, and Puerto Rico was going through their trouble. I mean, there was more support, with the restructuring than we initially anticipated. And if you had gotten in after the bankruptcy, you would have done quite well. We actually did. So when you get down to the town by town situation, I don't know. I mean, they're gonna have to have a large enough issuance of debt for it to be, you know, for an investor to be able to participate to start with. But you're right. They have a lot of these towns are given these local municipalities are given, you know, the free will to run their town and, you know, like a business, like however they, you know, without a whole lot of guidance other than from a board that I'm sure may not have the financial experience. So we have seen some of that. I would say in general, though, if you look across the whole, municipal market, there's probably fewer names that have gone into that distressed state than there has on the corporate side. And the corporate side, likewise, has the flexibility to manage their business how they see fit, whether it's taking on additional debt or making acquisitions that may not work out, or top heavy in terms of salaries, not managing their staff well. So it's, it is a business. And I think having actually the name city manager is interesting because it actually tells you that a municipality can be run like a business.
Well, I think politics is run like a business. It's just a business of politics. It's
right.
It's not exactly our business, but it is a business. They know just what's going to take to get themselves back elected.
Right. And whether or not that's good for their community in terms of from a financial point of view or from an investor point of view to help provide capital is may not be their primary goal. We tend to stay away from those situations. We do stay away from those situations. We do municipals. We're generally doing a revenue municipal bond that would be related to, say, maybe an airport or, you know, roads or some other kind of funding, electric company, you know, something else that is beyond,
well, so you're not,
you know,
a general
CEO, the taxing power of the company, of the municipality.
All right, I'll use the term. You're not talking about general obligation bonds. You're talking about
revenue
bonds based on revenue of something.
Yes, exactly.
Well, that makes sense. And, although, we got 2 minutes here, but didn't somebody turn a card over on that one at the, was it New Orleans or someplace where the revenue bonds ended up having to share with the other guys or something? Didn't that happen in one of these places in the last few years?
Yeah, and I don't know, I don't remember the exact story, but it can happen. Industrial revenue bonds, for example, can be treated almost like corporates, if you will, I think there are select situations where it's created problems. Again, you have to look through the indenture, or they call the offering statement for a municipal bond, to really look carefully at the language. And that's what we do. So that we can avoid those situations. I don't think you can make a generalized statement, about the industrial revenue market or the revenue market as a whole. Because the financing is done, maybe done differently, or again, you may not have the best underwriter. You know, you have to look at the language in that offering statement to make sure that you're protected as a bondholder. There are certainly situations, and I agree with you. We try to stay out of anything that's political or that could have political implications, whether it be a corporate bond that we're purchasing or a municipal bond.
Well, I just got a
it happens in the corporate world too.
Well, I was looking the other, I was going to say, when you read one of those things, do you get the feeling you're the first person who ever read them?
Right. Yeah, no. This has been going on for years. These issues have been, they come up and they're recurring. And, you know, again, I think if, like I said, in the short term, looking for yield, that might be, you know, might be an area that has a little opportunity. We'll see. I have one name that I'll mention on the equity side that I think is a new name for us that we like. It's Volition, which is ticker symbol VNRX, and they do blood tests for cancer screening. So,
really,
the interesting thing about this company is that they've started a line for canines, for dogs. So they have a vet cancer screening test. Blood test that they have now, which is a new technology. I like the stock. I mean, the stock was up 10% yesterday, but I would say it's at 430. I would say under 4, it's a buy. Really good management team. Again, we're looking at companies that are in areas, industries that are well run, that are well managed, well capitalized. This company has, I think, more than 10% cash on their balance sheet right now. And they're in a sector of the market that's going to continue to do well, a segment of the market that will do well regardless. So the, you know, if
Dan,
you look at from the pet point of view, it's going to continue to, you know, they're going to continue to grow. And also just from, you know, better methods of screening for cancer, easier methods for screening for cancer. And these guys have had a lot of success. And, again, I'm not generally in the biotech area, but this is a name that I think has,
and we have to take off here. I tell you what, though, in Chicago, anywhere in the pet area, everybody in the world, there's a shortage of dogs at the shelter. Everybody's got a dog.
Yes, especially right now.
Absolutely. But if you don't, when everybody goes back to work, I don't see having all these poor dogs. We should be in the dog psychology business. But Matty, our adorable producer, his guy Venkman, what's he going to do when he and Jill go back to work? I mean, he's got the world by the tail, 5 walks a day. He thinks that's normal. He's not going to be happy if they go back to work. Anyway, Merry Christmas, buddy. It's been great having you on, and we'll have you on next week, and we'll wish you a Happy New Year. But thank you for the stuff. Good stuff as usual. SP Futures up 6, NASDAQ Futures up 12. Be right back, Mr. Frank Fahey.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. This is Dave Scantino on the board. S&P futures up 6.25. NASDAQ futures up 11. Kind of been here slightly up all morning. We were up all day yesterday, then catapulted down on the close in the last half hour. Now we're back up a little bit. We made some of that back. The Dow futures up 38. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 169, 1.2%. FTSE up 6, call that flat. CAC down 5, call that flat. So DAX making up for some down day they had the other day. The rest of them are flat. In Asia, Nikkei up 143.5%. Shanghai down 19.5%. Hang Seng up 43, flat to 0.1%. The review of yesterday was a mixed bag. Dow was up 114 after being down 200 the day before. S&P up 275, so it's called almost flat. NASDAQ was down 36.3%. That happened like right in the last half hour. Bonds, 10-year yield 0.94, so nothing there. No kind of movement. Bund, minus 0.55, where it's been like forever. Actually, a little higher. It was down 0.6 there for a while. Japan, positive 0.01, so they've been stuck as well. Oil down 37 cents, 47.75. Brent down 37 cents, 50.83. Natural gas down 4 cents. 255, despite how cold it is outside, the national weather must be tepid, because the natural gas was up to $3. Now it's come back down to 255. RBOB, down a penny, 137. And then we have a gold up a dime, 1878. Silver down 9 cents, 2583. David, what do you got as far as traffic, weather, sports? And it's cold out.
It is cold out. It's 737 in Chicago. Traffic's starting to pick up a little bit, but still running smoothly for December 24th. We do have one incident. There's an accident at Roosevelt Road at 83, reported about 10 minutes ago. In weather today, very cold, 15 degrees out with a wind chill of minus 2. We will have some flurries today, and the high will be 21. To our Phoenix listeners, currently it's 47 and cloudy. Highs will be 63 with mostly cloudy skies. In sports, the NBA opener, the Bulls lose to the Hawks, 124-104, and the Phoenix Suns beat Dallas, 106-102. College basketball, Illinois tops Penn State, 98-81. Northwestern beats Indiana, 74-67. In the NFL this weekend, Saturday, Arizona takes on the 49ers, and the Bears will try to win one more, and they're at the Jaguars. Back to you, Chief.
I actually, even though I swore I'd probably never do it again, I watched some of the Bulls game last night. I mean, these other guys had almost 100 points by halftime, for God's sake.
Yeah, they got beat pretty bad from what I understand.
Is the defense the officially the Ole style, or what is it?
You know what? I don't follow the NBA as much as I could ask my son. He would know more about it than me.
There's no D.
Right.
You just get the ball. It's like playing on a playground. You get the ball and go back to the gun.
But it's been like that for a while, though, Tom.
Well, for the Bulls, for sure.
Yeah.
Some other guys.
Well, the fact that you can shoot from 30 feet makes a difference. Shoot and make it.
Well, true. Well, some guys can. The Bulls can't.
Right.
Some of them, the other team could. I mean, but Atlanta has gone out and spent, they were the lowest team under the cap, and they pretty much spent all the dough, and they're much better. The Bulls beat them three times last year. How bad they were. Not this year. They're a lot better. Maddie obviously knows more about this than me. Hey, Frank, how are you?
Good.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Hey, you closed down at noon today. Bonds
yeah.
at 1 o'clock.
Yeah,
that's central time.
Yeah, David and I this morning drove by some people sleeping under the bridge. Merry Christmas for them too. Not so, maybe not so merry. It's a tough Christmas year, boy. And I was reading, you listen on, just by the time we drive in, a guy who's been doing this for years on WBBM does all the Christmas pass. And he was talking about 1950, how we're on a general alert because of Korea. And he was talking about the Christmas of 1930, where the Bears and the Cardinals played a charity game in this Chicago Stadium, so they could have football and send the money to, because how bad things were after the market crash in 1930. And there's been some pretty crummy Christmases. I think an awful lot of people this year are having a crummy Christmas, which is unfortunate.
Right, and there seems to be not a whole lot of concern.
No, we don't. A little bit.
Especially in D.C.
No, well...
Veto a defense spending bill so our soldiers don't get paid.
Well, I mean...
And I can tweet whatever I want to with impunity.
Well, I think that... I'll go back to the Patriot Act. Now, I would say, Frank, that if you and I, and if we even took some of our rightest of right-wing friends... On virtually every page of the Patriot Act, we would find something we were had an objection to. I mean, essentially, it was a "get rid of your freedoms" act, and we're not sure we got anything for it that I can come up with. Yet, if you were hanging around some place, having an adult beverage, pontificating, which you've been known to do, I'm sure somebody would have said, "Hey, man, what do you want? Your mom raped by some guy with a rag in his head?" I mean, right? So, I mean. When Trump talks about things wrong in this bill, I'm going to say out of the 5,000 pages in either one of the bills, you and I and David would find 2,000 pages we are totally objecting to, and we'd like them the hell out of there. So, but of course,
I'm guessing that you and I have probably read as much of the bill as he has.
Well,
I know we've read more of the Constitution than he has.
Well, I mean, it's those are shots, and I get it. But my point being,
they're accurate too.
I know, but this
known as being remarkably intellectually incurious and a non-reader.
Well, that he reads the magazines that have his picture on them. What can I say? but you just did it. You said, okay, he's not going to let military people get their paycheck on December 31st. Well, yeah, but there's an awful lot more in that bill. That's the cover. I mean, I when Ronald Reagan proposed it, I thought it was a horrible idea. And by the way, it is unconstitutional. The idea of having a line item veto. But you know what, Frank, I'm warming up to it. I'm warming up to it. I mean, if you and I were,
You can have it if we do something about guns.
Well, I'm saying
it's a fair trade.
But you keep. This particular the COVID bill, I'll call it. It's 5,500
pages, right?
No, it's 5,500.
Oh, when they add the other 2,500.
Well, I'm going to say, and it's more of a question for you and David. Maybe you guys know more about this than me. I'm going to say at any given time, there's 2,500, 3,000 pages of, I don't even want to use the term laws, but something hanging around in committees in Congress, any bill that comes through. It could be a bill for giving David his next five batches of Viagra for free. All of a sudden, there's going to be 2,500 pages on there that have nothing to do with David. They're just hanging around waiting for a bill. And I'm going to say that there's...
Oh, I don't disagree. That'd be an interesting number to know.
Because I just think they're waiting for a bill. There's stuff in there that has nothing to do with COVID. I'm sure there's stuff in this military spending that have nothing to do with military. And why? Now... So what I would like to say, I mean, I think what we need as a country, in one man's opinion, is for some 5,500-page bill to land on the tri-headed monster of David, Frank, Chief, Oval Office guys, and for us to say, well, here's what you sent me, and then the next what we have one that's maybe 500 pages, and we say, this is what we're going to sign. And the rest of this crap...
I think either one of the three of us could come up with something more compelling than Section 230 as a reason to veto it.
Well, yeah. I mean, he didn't read very far. But I'll bet there's all kinds of stuff in there. I'm sure there's a, they used to call them allowances. Now, what was the word before that? Well, first of all, when you and I were young, the term was pork. But now how many iterations of the word? It became, was it allowances? Then it became what's the word before?
Oh yeah, I know.
David, help us here. What's the word that they use for the stuff that has nothing to do, like the
when an individual member is allowed to put something into a bill?
Yeah, like a bridge from one of his neighborhoods to another that nobody else cares about, kind of thing.
I guess we're all getting old. Can't remember that.
But it was like three terms ago. The allowances was one of them. I'll think of it. I'll think of it the minute the show's over. But the word was pork. I just like to sit there and go, on page 300, which you don't see in here anymore, was Dave Scatina's new parking lot for his district. We don't need that. Sorry, Dave. Even though the guy that owns the parking lot gave you $4,000 and here's the proof, screw you. I mean, but I'd like some president to go through that, every single one, and name the person and name the money they got from the guy. Maybe that would help our democracy, but you're never going to hear that. Even Trump won't do that. He won't say, I'm taking this one out, because even if he says he's a Democrat, this guy got $20,000 to put this in here as a tax bill for Joe's slaughterhouse or something. And we don't care about Joe's slaughterhouse, the fact that he gave our guy $20,000, his guy $20,000, I don't want it in here. I think these people need to be shown up, and they're not. It's never going to happen. Biden's not going to do it. Even Trump didn't do it. He never went down that road. He did in general, but they never lash out an individual person. Frank Fahey got $20,000 from this guy, and guess what? There's a carve out in here where the guy can pollute more than anybody else, because you know the stuff's in there. But nobody ever says that.
Well, on the pollution side, at times you do from people like the Sierra Club or whatever.
Only if somebody dies. Only if somebody dies. Only
global warming people. We hear about the pollution waivers.
Only if it's what's the place in? It's not in Burridge, but it's near Burridge where all the people are getting brain cancer. Only
Stericycle? No, yeah, it wasn't Stericycle. It was somebody else. The ones that sterilized.
Yeah, they had some chemical that they were. Only if it reaches that stage does it blow up.
You mean killing children? Is there a clarion call?
Or even adults, even old white guys.
And that's the only reason it was closed, was because it was in a upper middle class neighborhood in a rich county.
Well, I have a quick story, and I shouldn't lob these out there, but it's how we learn, Frank. And David knows, if you were on the trading floor for as long as we were. David, you probably were there actually longer than I was. How many years?
Oh, I was there 30 plus, Tom. 80, I think I started 80, 85.
I was only 20. So yeah, wow. I was 1980 to 2000.
And I made it 84 to 2006 or 7.
Wow, so everybody was at 20 plus.
And that's 2019 for me.
Well, as you know, there was no secret, right? The trading floor, everybody knew everything about everybody, right? I mean, it was just, talk about it, whenever you get a couple thousand people in one room, there are no secrets. Well, I was doing a shtick for a while where I was going to see the new ballparks. So I went to the one in Detroit, and I got some nice seats, and I'm sitting next to this lady with these two, and I was 6'4 at the time, these two kids are like 6'6. Those were twin boys, a nice lady, and it turns out she worked at a, what's the parts manufacturer, Frank? Somehow or another, they used to be the auto company, Delphi, right? And then they all...
Right, they were part of GM.
Yeah, and then they spun them up, but they also did stuff for other... They became parts manufacturers for a lot of companies.
They were like the radios and everything.
Yeah, this place ended up being... they did fuel injectors. So the lady was telling me how they made the best fuel injectors in the world, that even Rolls-Royce bought their fuel, whatever. Which doesn't surprise me. I think they're in Jackson, Michigan.
I think they were called Delco back in the day.
No, Delphi was some spinoff of
they spun off Delco from GM.
Right, but then Delphi was something else.
They had a big
plant
down in Kokomo. You drive down to Indy from South Bend, and they had a massive plant there.
Well, anyway, these guys, she said some guy came in, general manager, and all these people were losing their jobs in upstate New York. I mean, the people that had the locomotive manufacturers and all those people. Anyway, there's all kinds of labor that was available, for lack of a better term, in upstate New York, Schenectady and all those places. And so they decided to move the plant to upstate New York so they could save $3 an hour on the workers. Well, of course, it took like 2 years to move the place, and she was cataloging parts. She said it was like 1.5 million little tools that they sent. I mean, I'm sure at the end of the day, somebody bright went through it. He'd find out that from a money level, it probably was not the brightest in the bunch. And I said, me being the curious, by the way, what happened to your husband? Well, he died of this kind of rare form of brain cancer. And funny, there was like 15 other guys in the plant died from the same thing. Immediately pops into my squirrely brain. They didn't move that plant because of the labor difference. They moved it because they had a health issue there. Was my thought immediately. I don't know what you guys think of that, but
I think you're probably right.
That they're getting out of Dodge before these 20 people talk to each other and all of a sudden start suing the place. And who knows how many other people have it. And, oh, by the way, if somebody else gets it 10 years from now after we move the plant, who cares?
Well, the big GM electromotive plant was, I don't know if that's LaGrange or Lyons, but...
It's right on 47th Street, right by Joliet Road there.
Right, I used to sell them computers.
It was now they still make the diesel engines, but I think they're all, I think the General Motors locomotives are assembled in Muncie, I believe, in Muncie, Indiana. Does that make sense?
Yes.
But they still, I think, make the diesel engines. They used to make the whole locomotive, correct?
Yeah, there were thousands of people were.
Well, biggest
portable generators on Earth.
Yeah. Well, for those that are kind of the Chicago manufacturing, we talk about the demise of. We're talking about individual places and just naming a few of them. I mean, my uncle worked at the Western Electric Hawthorne Works, and I won't say 7 days, but it was 24 hours a day for five, and a lot of times they work Saturdays.
It was on Holman, right?
No, it was the 22nd and 23rd in Cicero.
Right, which is where the big tower is.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, I don't know. The people, if you bought anything, they had to, I mean, your phones, the cable, the big switching facilities, everything. It was like the only plant they had for a while, right? Right, Frank?
Yep.
And, I mean, every piece of telephone equipment in this country was made in one place. And so they were, I don't know, how many people worked there? 25,000? I mean, some incredible.
More. I mean, when I was born, I know Studebaker was pushing 20,000 people in South Bend.
Well, and we're talking about the electromotive plant, which was, again, probably a 2-to-3-shift operation.
I'd say that was 8,000 to 10,000 easily.
Yeah, and then you had Pullman, which had, you know, a couple thousand people, but these places were all over the place. You know, these kind of,
and you could go just where I grew up, South Bend, Mishawaka. I could rattle off 10 people that employed more than 1,000 people. Torrington Bearing was over 4,000 people.
Well, and
Bendix was pushing 20,000. Bendix Missile was 10,000.
Well, you had on the south side, just on Kedzie, and David will remember this, you had Nabisco, which is kind of half-assed still there. Made cookies for like the entire Midwest, and then three blocks down was Rheem Manufacturing, where they made all the hot water heaters. I mean,
Tootsie Roll was around there.
Yeah, Tootsie Roll was around there, and American Can was on 63rd or 59th and Western, where they made all of the cans for beer cans and all those kinds of things. I mean, just one after another, and I don't know if there's a few left, but not a whole hell of a lot. And I don't know if anybody's place around it's 2 and 3 shifts.
Maybe Ford and down by Hagwish.
Yeah, it's possible.
North Heights.
On North Avenue, the site of the was kind of interesting. The site of the it used to be the busiest Home Depot in this section, in the country was right on North Avenue, right by me. That used to be a Procter & Gamble plant. They made soap. And the interesting part was, let's just say they had a lot of shall we say hookers. They were there for the Procter & Gamble plant that hung around for the Home Depot. So the Home Depot was 20 was 24 hours, and let's say North Avenue always had the ladies, even when Dr. Dana
started. And then I used to go to the shrimp house there to get shrimp.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't live too far from the neighborhood, and there were always hookers there.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got to get your energy back.
They eat better than me.
Well, Dr. J and I, when we first started the show, we were 5-6. We were on the score. So we're driving in at 4:30, and we're always driving by the girls in the summertime. Hey, you guys give us a break? And it's like 90 degrees. We're going, ah! But they were there, and all of a sudden they weren't. But
Roosevelt Road, just east of Oak Park, or whatever that is there. It's not Oak Park that far south, but, you know, near Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
That whole stretch where Windy City Studios are, that was just, God, the amount of work there in Cicero.
Well, I did one of the most interesting, there's a guy, who knows, he might be dead by now, but David will love this. I read this maybe 6 years ago. The guy would chart the price of call girls, like countrywide. Now, of course, he what kind of research he had to do, but the last one I read, and this was, you know, within the last five, we were doing the show here, that he was astounded because for the last year or two, the price of high price call girls was going up, and the price of essentially for low price call girls for every man were going down. So that was
streetwalkers.
Yeah, because the idea that the economy, you know, the one percenters were doing better than the rest of the people, was very obvious in the price of hookers. You know, you would never think that, but I guess if you're an economic theorist, it would follow through, right? I mean, all right, Frank, enough of this. What about the market? It's kind of limping in here to the
end
of the
year. We're still in a range, and it's a bigger range than we like. I mean, it's evidenced by, Monday morning when we were down 75, 80 points on the SPX, the Standard & Poor's 500. But it was still in the range, you know, 3,600 to 37, probably 3,550 to 3,700, or 3,680. So, yeah, that's the range right now.
What is it?
About a 5% range, and we should not be surprised by anything that happens.
What does it say to you, positive or negative, or too soon to tell, regarding if you were to name the hottest 10 stocks right now? Well, except for maybe Tesla, which is now back in, it was now in the S&P. I'm going to say the other nine are not really in any index. Is that okay?
It says to me, I'm getting calls from people. I told you, I got 3 and 4 days from people I've trained to trade, and they've all said, boy, it's so easy to make money now.
Yeah.
All you got to do is buy. And all of them were names I'd never heard of, and they were all in the top 10 active stocks.
Well, you've got Snowflake, you've got DoorDash, you got Uber. I mean, they're all in there, right?
Yeah, but I've heard of DoorDash and Uber. I've never heard of Snowflake and, you know,
well, the other ones.
And I mean, there was a lot of electric car / battery companies. Vivian, that company down in Bloomington Normal, that's making the pickup truck.
Yeah, they're all either,
whatever it is.
They're all to do with the electric cars, or they're all having to do with doing meetings and stuff from home and that kind of thing. That's the whole area they're in. Well, not all of them, or some kind of biotech.
I mean, Pfizer's still cruising in the mid-30s, and they came up with something that works.
Well, yeah, but Pfizer's, we actually had a question, Frank, you weren't on one day, one of the listeners, you know, why isn't Pfizer up so much? In fact, the most bizarre part was when Pfizer first came out with the vaccine, the stock went up like, what, 8 or 10% that night?
And yeah, it went up to the high 30s.
And that morning, the chairman sold shares. And the stock went right back down again. But the chairman obviously realizes that the vaccine is, I'll be very generous here and say, it's going to be worth $2 billion to Pfizer, and their revenue is 56. So it's 1/26th of their revenue. Which, you know, it's a good thing, but it's not, you know, it's not going to...
Plus, Pfizer has income. They don't have IFCOM.
Right.
Undefined IFCOM.
But it's much more of a big deal for Moderna.
Yes, because it's a smaller company.
But it also, I mean, again, we got a dash here in a second. I'm gonna say that they're selling these shots to the government somewhere between, I'm going to say, 12 and 18 bucks, maybe 20. And so say it costs them 2 or 3. I'll be generous. it's still not Viagra at $50 a pill, which costs you 20 cents. The margin on this is nowhere near the margin on their other stuff. I mean, it's nowhere near the margin on chemotherapy, which is like $2,000 a pop for somebody to probably cost them $10. It's not even close, right?
No.
But I mean,
because all of a sudden there's a focus on the common good with a vaccine.
Well, you
there's
also
no focus on the common good when it comes to Viagra.
Well, but also the government said we're gonna buy these vaccines from you. We want you to manufacture them before we even know they work. And oh, by the way, we want $100 million, and we're gonna give you $18 a shot. So nobody's gonna say no to that, right? Because it's $1.8 billion. I mean, it's still a lot of money. And they're essentially saying if it doesn't work, it's on us. So you're not going to say go pound sand. You're going to do it, but it's still, in terms of margins these people get, it's not even close to what the normal margin is in that industry, right?
Right.
So, but I mean, but it's the kind
and
of
you and I are old enough to know that it's not really Pfizer scientists that did it. It was the core Upjohn Research Facility that came up with
it.
But who hears Upjohn anymore?
Well, right, but I mean, that's what Merck and Pfizer do now. They just buy other people's stuff.
Right, and then a place like Kalamazoo that had a wonderful relationship with Upjohn loses that cash flow.
Oh, sure, absolutely. All right,
Frank, into the city.
Thank you very much. Have a Merry Christmas, and hopefully I'll see you Saturday or Sunday.
If you, yeah, you will see me.
You come out of your kitchen.
I have to make a delivery. I made 12 dozen wings and a dozen are smoked.
Oh, God.
Now,
we
a dozen able, drumsticks.
Are we going to be able to couple
good stuff.
Are we going to have a cup of coffee, or we got to go look at birds like 8 feet apart or something?
Okay. Well, there's a Western tanager down in Chanahan right now.
Oh, God. That's a bird.
Merry
awesome.
Christmas.
SP Futures up 5, Nasdaq Futures up 8. David, thank you. We'll be back on Monday. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.